The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 603, recorded on February 24th, 2021.
Edition of the TD Gaming Podcast, the 437th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I'm TJ Denzer.
I'm Scott Durr.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
Yeah, and we had to delay this because of life. There's a lot of news coming up, and, you know, if you thought the Nintendo Switch show was kind of disappointing, which a lot of people did, although I'm going to say this right now, a lot of the games they showed at the show were also also announced to be multi-platform, so it makes me think more than ever that they were just covering the first half of 2021. It was not really supposed to be anything big, you know. Like all, you know, the things that are going to be interesting are going to be announced, you know, around E3.
Yeah, probably.
I think there was still good stuff on the show. I think we discussed the things that we found interesting.
Yeah, and there are some things that we did find out which Zelda is going to be remastered, and that's Skyward Sword.
Yes, for those who have not played it.
We'll and you did not play it, Scott?
No, I did not.
Okay.
And they'll get that chance to play it. There's other games that, like, my wife is looking forward to Saga Frontier. I know Legend of Mana is coming as well, if you're interested in that or want it on the Switch at all.
Yeah, but we're all interested in that one RPG, which claims to have choices.
Yeah, that's what they said. They show a little bit of it, that you get choices, interactions, and there'll be like moments where you make a decision that weighs more heavily, and that'll, influence the path of your characters, how they react with you, and what you can do.
Here's the thing. Last week, I don't know if we discussed the look of the game, because it seemed to me that the game seemed a lot grimier than most JRPGs. There was sort of like a dark, grimy look to it.
Yeah.
You know, with really thick paint strokes. It looked like, I don't know, it looked dark and grimy and dirty, and it makes me wonder if that's going to be the mood of the game.
Yeah, it does seem to have a Game of Thrones feel, only so much as in, you know, like you said, dark. It's a dark storyline. There's bad stuff happening. It's war. So you can, you know, assume that bad things are going to happen to good people, basically.
Hmm. So, anyway, what have you been playing, TJ?
This week I reviewed Ghosts and Goblins Resurrection on Nintendo Switch. That game is stupid hard. Like, ridiculously, ridiculously hard. But they did add some things to it to, like... I mean, for those who don't know, Ghosts and Goblins started as an arcade game, and it's notoriously one of the hardest arcade games ever created. It's very unfair. It's very unforgiving. Once you jump, you are, it's one of those games where once you jump, you are dedicated to that jump until you hit the ground, like momentum and all. And, and Ghosts and Goblins Resurrection is still all of that, but like with a new fresh coat of paint, some new songs, some, refreshed songs. And, but they did add some things to it. They added a magic system. They added lower difficulties. So, like, you can play it on the classic style, which is just as ridiculous as it used to be. But there are also, like, lower difficulties that have checkpoints throughout the levels. There is straight up a difficulty that every time you die, it will just revive you wherever you died.
Yeah.
So it's not without mercy.
Okay.
But dang, it is the most ridiculously difficult and like unapologetically difficult thing I've played in a long time. I love the game. I love the series. I've beaten a couple of the Ghosts and Goblins games, like way back when.
Oh, I played the original arcade game.
Yeah, it's so you know know what I'm talking about when I say. Well,
here's the thing. I don't know how it is for the new one, but in the arcade version, once I got the daggers that were just like rapid fire, then I could go really far because that was a big help.
Yeah, and one of the things about this game that has always been about this game is that, like, you'll find weapon pickups, but the weapon is always going to be random. And the worst thing that can happen
is that
the weapon pickup drops, and it falls into a place where, like, you have to try to carefully jump over it.
No, I hated getting the torch. It was just, like, it had an area, but it was so slow that it was really just a waste of time. Especially since most of the enemies in the original Ghosts and Goblins were flying, and that wouldn't really help against them.
Yeah. They made the torch a little bit more viable in Ghosts and Goblins Resurrection. They turned it into a fire bottle.
Okay.
Where once it hits the ground, it makes like a wave of fire.
Yeah, but you see, that's the problem, is that there are flying creatures in Ghosts and Goblins.
Oh, and they made it so that you can throw upward.
Okay, but the other game could too, but the arc was just so... Oh, anyways, let's just say I didn't like the torch at all, okay? It sucked. Fair. I just liked the rapid-fire dagger, because speed was important in that game.
Yeah.
Speed is important in a lot of games.
Well, I mean, in this case, because one thing about all the weapons in Ghosts and Goblins is that basically it was an original arcade game. All the weapons had the same basic damage. So when you had daggers that would just fling out of you like one per half a second, it's like you just clear out a room quickly.
Also, all of the weapons have a rule where like you can throw up to two of them at a time, and then once a weapon hits or goes off screen, then you can throw another.
Okay.
And that is something to consider with the daggers, because you can throw three daggers instead of two.
And they're fast. I mean, they'll go off the screen really quickly.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, daggers are pretty good. There's a few other weapons that I really enjoyed. I think they added this one. It's like a rolling ball that you can throw ahead of you.
That was never in the original game.
Yeah, this looked like a brand new weapon that I've never seen before. But, yeah, the game is fun. It does do the thing that every Ghosts and Goblins game does, which, for the uninitiated, once you supposedly, quote-unquote, beat the game, you haven't really beat the game. It was an illusion, and you have to beat the game again.
Well, I mean, in the original game, when you completed the game, you just started from the first level again. You know, it was just endless recycling. I mean, it doesn't look too different from even the original one. I mean, the knight still looks like the knight. It just has a higher resolution.
Yeah. It also has sort of a papercraft art style, which a lot of people didn't like when they first saw it. But once it's in motion, I really like the way it all looks.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the game. I appreciate how difficult it is, because I like that kind of challenge. I'm the kind of person that will try hard on that until I get it right.
It's an arcade game. They were meant to steal quarters from you.
And... Yeah. But I also appreciate that they added those features that make it easier to approach. Yeah. Like, just having that one where you can straight up revive whenever you die is it's going to make it so more people can play that game.
Does it play it like a roguelike?
How do you mean?
I mean, just, okay, you die, start over from the beginning, but you still keep what you some of the improvements that you had.
Yes.
Okay. See, that's roguelikes are a way to go back to the original arcade feel, but instead of popping quarters, you're just starting over, but you get a little bit of what you earned. You keep a little bit of what you earned.
Right. So if you died with the dagger, you'll start the level with the dagger.
Okay. Yeah, I still haven't finished Dead Cells, so...
Yeah, and another thing about this one is that once you beat a level... The game doesn't like you don't have to play the entire game in one session.
Yeah.
It's separated into levels, and once you beat a level, you can either you can go forward to the next one, or you can go back and play that last one. You just have them all available to you once you beat them.
By the way, just for people who are wondering, it is multi-platform. It's going to be for PS4, PC, and Xbox One. Mm-hmm. So.
And it comes out tomorrow for everybody.
Yeah.
So, which, tomorrow being February 25th, so it should be out by the time this podcast.
I have a feeling like in 6 months this will be on Xbox Game Pass. It's that sort of game, you know. People buy it, and then after a while, it's sort of like, okay, we're going to put it on Game Pass for like a couple of months just to get people hooked on it.
This is a very interesting game, too. It's not like a high... It's from Capcom. It's not a high-profile game, but it is a Capcom game. Like, it is from their classic library, and like... I kind of love that Capcom still takes chances on doing stuff like this.
Have you seen what Konami's doing with Frogger?
I have. It looks fun.
I mean, real-life Frogger. So. I mean, there were a lot of Frogger, but they're turning Frogger into a game show. Mm-hmm. And basically, you'd have people try to dodge traffic and go on these things, you know. So they're sort of turning Frogger into American Gladiators or something like that, you know, in which...
Or Double Dare.
Yeah, something like that. One of those ninja games in which you have to get through the obstacle course, which involves dodging traffic. I hope the traffic isn't fatal. Like, I hope they don't use real cars.
No, I'm sure it'll be like foam or something.
Yeah. Well, it has to be something that's going to knock you on your ass, though.
Yeah, foam can do that if it's big enough.
Yeah.
Big enough.
Oh, I can just picture Blaze with a car front and just ramming into people. but yeah. I mean, they have some other classic arcade games that are going to be released. I can't talk about them right now. But even Pong got released. I reviewed Pong Quest, mm-hmm. which is unabashedly a kid's game, but as far as kid's games goes, I was having a good time with it. The only problem is Pong needs a paddle, and it does not work well with an analog stick.
Yeah. Yeah, Pong always had like that little rotator dial, which
yeah.
was...
I mean, it's called a paddle. And, it, you know, it, actually, I wonder if you can use a mouse on PC, because at least a mouse will feel like a paddle, you know, because you can control how fast you go up and down on it.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about using a mouse for the... Like, I've tried using a mouse to play games like Breakout and Arkanoid, and it just feels strange.
Yeah, it just feels just as strange with an analog stick, though.
The X-Ball, it still worked pretty well.
It works, it just feels odd. I don't know. For me, it's just like there's something about the feel of like that little dial that makes me happy.
Oh, yeah, the 8-pin controllers. I miss them. But yeah. So there is a recent announcement today, or actually yesterday, which is not a news item, but I think we should talk about it now before we go on to what have we been playing. Actually, first, Scott, what have you been... Oh, wait, you already said you were playing, right?
Well, I have been playing Valheim some more, but I've also started Sukuna Rise and Ruin.
What is that?
It's that game that came out last year, like I guess towards the end of the year. And it's a game where you play this goddess that's been banished from the heavens because you started a fire. And you burned the sake, I guess it was. And now you're growing rice in a rice paddy field to accumulate power to fight in a side-scrolling adventure where you fight bosses and trying to get back to heaven by building up your abilities again. And
so you're growing rice to get to heaven. That is the most Chinese/Japanese concept I've ever heard of.
Yeah, it's set in Japan, or at least it appears to be Japanese, or...
I'm wondering if it was actually made by Japanese.
I guess I'd have to check. I mean, I'd be surprised, I guess, if it wasn't.
I don't know.
Pretty good. Let's see.
But, you know, speaking of Valheim, one of the news items we're not going to be discussing is that they've gone over 4 million sales. Mm-hmm. And it is wildfire right now.
It's been out for 4 weeks. Like, it's just came out in early access at the beginning of this month. So okay. that is pretty incredible.
It isn't a game, a free game, like... oh, damn it, I forgot that Zelda clone name again. Why did they name it that? It's so hard to remember for me.
Tunic?
What?
You talking about Tunic?
No. Okay. No, the free Zelda kind of game. That's published by a Chinese company. What?
Oh, Genshin Impact.
Yeah, I keep on forgetting Genshin Impact's name. I don't know why.
Because it's...
it's not a good name. I mean, I can remember Zelda, but Genshin Impact? I think it's the Impact that's getting me. What kind of game has the name Impact in it?
The one that wants to make an impact?
A game with a Genshin Impact in it.
Yeah.
I haven't been playing anything new. I have been playing MLB The Show 21, their stress test. It's under NDA, so I can't say anything about it. But I will say, I like... So, here's the thing. They're very strict about doing videos or screenshots of it. So, I was amused when I was playing that diagonally all over the screen was my name plus the little Xbox logo. So that if I actually did a screenshot, they know exactly who took that screenshot or did the video.
So the makers of Sukuna Rise and Ruin are Idlewise?
Idlewise.
They do appear to be Japanese, and the publisher is Exeed, which you...
But Idlewise is not Japanese.
Okay, then I'm sorry.
No, I mean, it's a Japanese developer, but I'm just saying, Idlewise is a place in Germany.
I didn't mean the word was, I meant the company is.
Is it Idlewise? That's Germany. You should know this if you ever saw The Sound of Music.
No, I didn't. So
you've heard the song Idlewise, you just don't know the name.
They're not German, and they're Japanese, and that's just all...
Whatever. In the end, it doesn't really matter. Just as long as they didn't name themselves the Lonely Goat Herd.
Don't even know what joke you're trying to make.
That's also a song from The Sound of Music. I am the hill of Lonely Goat Herd. Yodelay, yodelay. Oh, come on. You have to know Do Re Mi then. Do, a deer, a female deer. Re, a drop of golden sun. That's also from Sound of Music. Or my favorite things. Da 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 da. I don't know the lyrics to this song. Those are a few of my favorite things. Anyways, we're not going to be talking about The Sound of Music. So, the one thing I wanted to bring up was that there are some rumors coming out from some credible sources about a new Nintendo Switch coming out, which is going to be essentially the Nintendo Switch Pro. But you know what it's rumored to be called? The Super Nintendo Switch.
I'll believe it when I see it. I saw that article and I was going to post it, but I feel like it's just more rumors and they already stated that we're not going to hear anything soon. I guess you might want to figure out what they mean by soon.
Here's the thing. Nintendo isn't shy about making new form factors. I mean, 3DS XL, the 2DS, the 2DX XL, all these iterations of their own thing. So I would be surprised if there was a Nintendo Switch, a Super Nintendo Switch Pro. The only thing I think it would be is that any games that are made for it will be also be able to be played on the regular Nintendo Switch.
It would have to be, and that does seem like they're... If that is true, it would seem like that's playing on nostalgia.
The big difference will be that it'll be able to play on a screen at 4K.
Yeah. I'd like bigger Joy-Con controllers. That would be nice, but...
The ones that don't drift too quickly?
Yes, and don't drift at all. Or at least just... I don't know, just...
Well, they said more ergonomic Joy-Cons. Which I hope means sturdier.
Yeah, I hope they're better Joy-Cons.
Yeah. Here's the thing, though. And it looks nice. It actually looks more like an iPad than it does a Switch, except with the buttons on the side. I just hope that whatever it is, that it has a larger capacity for hard drive space.
Yeah, that would be good.
I mean, we know that the Hitman 3 was a streaming game on it, but I don't know if they're willing to do that for all of their games, really.
Yeah, like, I don't think that this, whatever it is, I actually don't think it comes out in 2021. I think it's gonna, I think we'll see it in 2022, and I think it'll probably coincide with when they decide to reveal and give a launch date to the next Zelda game.
You mean Breath of the Wild 2?
Breath of the Wild 2.
They might announce it at the end of the year for the next year kind of thing. Like they did with Animal Crossing. They had said, you know, at the end of the year 2019 that they were going to have it come out in March of last year, and that's what they did. So they might do something similar again.
I do hope they call it the Super Nintendo Switch, because the SNES was the best console of all time.
Exactly, that would be a really good reason to do it, to play on that nostalgia thing, because I'd like that too. I loved this Super Nintendo. That was my childhood favorite console after the Nintendo, and if they made like color scheme like it with like gray and purple, they'd just be like nice.
Yeah, purple is an unusual color for a console.
Yeah, but they did it twice for the GameCube and for Super Nintendo.
I don't remember the Super Nintendo being purple. At least mine wasn't purple. I mean, it had those two purple big things in the front. You know, those, you know.
And their buttons on the controller were, like, purple and lavender.
I don't remember that, but then again, it's way back when.
They were purple, I remember. Like I said, that was my childhood console, so I do remember. So they had some purple little accents, so it was nice.
Yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on to game news. And obviously the biggest game news of the week, although, you know, some really big news popped up, you know, this week as well. But BlizzCon 2021 announcements. And TJ, what was your, before we go into what was actually announced, what was your overall impression of the BlizzCon announcements?
Overwatch was super underwhelming, and I don't know why
You know what? I think that was the wrong question. Let's just go through what they announced. First was the Blizzard Arcade Collection, which was launched actually this week. It features Lost Vikings, Black Fun, and Rock and Roll Racing, both in classic and newly enhanced form. I never played any of that, but I remember the Lost Vikings being around. I don't remember Blackthorn.
I played Blackthorn and Lost Vikings. Blackthorn was like a Prince of Persia game, old school Prince of Persia game. But you were a guy that was, or you were a prince that was exiled to a planet because it was being taken over, and you were like the last heir. And so you grew up on Earth, and you were just this vagabond. And then suddenly one day this portal opens up, and it says, you know, come back and free our world. And you go in with a shotgun, and you're, you know, trying to help you free your people from.
Did you play it on the Super Nintendo or on DOS?
Super Nintendo, yeah. Oh, okay. Super Nintendo. And it had some really edgy music, and it was very dark, of course. And I had a lot of fun with it. It was a fun game. And Lost Vikings was another kind of Prince of Persia game, but you had three characters.
Yeah, it was more like Goblins, in which each one had their own special ability.
Yep, each one had a special ability, and that one was a very colorful, light hearted game compared to Blackthorn.
I remember Rock and Roll Racing, though. Cool. Yeah. I remember Rock and Roll Racing. It was the one with the isometric. It was sort of like Racing Destruction set to me. Anyways, then you have the 9.1 patch, Chains of Domination, coming to World of Warcraft Shadowlands, and bringing players to a new location called Corthia with new quests, a new 10-boss raid, an 8-boss mega dungeon, and more. I have to admit, I miss going on raids with people that I actually liked back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Blizzard continues with also bringing the Burning Crusade to Classic. This was not a surprise. I mean, everybody knew that the Burning Crusade was coming, because, to tell you the truth, World of Warcraft to me was incomplete without the Burning Crusade. Until you got the Blood Elves and the, I feel bad that I forgot the name of the race, because that was my main. It was a Draenei, that's right, Draenei Priest.
Yeah.
Comes with, you know, what came with it, you know, level cap of 70, two new races, the Blood Elves and Draenei, and flying mounts and more, and stuff like that. Then you have Hearthstone is getting its own Warcraft-themed expansion called Forge in the Barrens and a new mode called Mercenaries. The upcoming expansion brings 135 new cards and will kick off the Year of the Griffin. The thing about Hearthstone is that it's had a lot of negative press in the past year.
Mm-hmm. Well, they released the Demon Hunter set, and it was so horribly unbalanced that it, like, they spent patch upon patch trying to make it so, like, because everybody played that deck. Everybody played it because it was horribly broken.
And the other thing was that they tried their VIP mode, their subscription mode, and they found out that, you know, you make more without it than you do with it. Which is sort of defeating the purpose.
Yeah. But, they still do good things with Hearthstone, they just haven't had a good run of it recently.
Mm-hmm. We finally got to see the rogue class for Diablo 4, which was a creepy trailer. When someone says, you know, I'll have my ear on you, they don't mean it literally.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, the most important announcement of the entire show was Diablo 2's Resurrected. It's going to be on PC, PS4, PS5, Xbox One, Xbox Series X, and Nintendo Switch. And I will be all over that like white on rice, because I can't tell you how much Diablo 2 I played back in the day. And I still play.
That's one of my dark secrets about gaming, is that I've never actually played Diablo 2.
Wow.
Yeah, I know, right? I grew up in a Christian household, and that game had a Satan in it. So I never had a chance to play that one in my childhood.
Oh, yeah, Diablo 2 Resurrected also comes with the expansion, too.
But, yeah, so, like, I'm excited for this as well, because I have a lot of friends who've played this game. They're ready to return to it. And it's going to be my first time ever being able to play Diablo 2.
Here's the thing about Diablo 2. There's no World of Warcraft without it. Because Diablo 2 perfected, and it still hasn't been matched, the ratio of loot grinding. Because you'll get your trash, but it's... Yeah, you get the trash, but you know what? It knows when to give you those special items that'll just keep on making you coming back, and the, putting them in the Heradric Cube, and transforming them, and when you get a yellow item, it's like God just kissed you. Mm. So that was the game that started the gray... Let's see, gray, green, blue, purple, rarity color scheme, with yellow being the unique items. And, it also had the secret cow level, where you get attacked by cows, and they all say moo.
And you just grind forever on there, getting to level 80 for some reason.
And I'm going to tell you, so there's one person who was interviewed on that thing. He apparently had been playing for 20,000 hours of Diablo 2. And I will say, I could believe it. Because here's the thing, when you completed the game, then you started over, but you started at a harder level. But you never quite got all the loot. This is, like I said, it perfected the loot grind crack.
Yeah.
You always wanted to get that next item.
There are so many different, like, very popular games nowadays that owe a lot of their success to the formula Diablo 2 perfected. Borderlands wouldn't exist without it.
Grim Dawn.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, though. A lot of those games, it's all about the numbers. Diablo 2 never felt like it was about the numbers. It was more like, what could it do, and how could it do it, and how cool could it make it? You never really cared about the numbers. You just cared about what the item did differently. Oh, shit, I got a dagger that every time it hits somebody, lightning would spread out from it and kill creatures around it.
Yes. Like, I am very excited to have this in a platform, like in a new platform that I can easily reach. Because not for, like, I know I could have played it on PC. I know it's still available, but I don't know. Like, there's just something about, like, I didn't quite ever have the time or the patience to go do that. And I didn't have, and like, and come with it coming to new platforms, it'll be in a place where, like, my friends and I are already playing and we can get together and, like party up on that.
Here's the other thing, too. The look of it. Now, the game, the original game, played at 25 frames per second, and you know what? It'll continue to play at 25 frames per second, but the graphics will be at 60 frames per second, and they had to really work around it. Also, even though it's sharper, I noticed they didn't change the textures that much. So basically, you have a game that looks like the original Diablo 2, except it's sharper, doesn't look as ancient because the patch, the expansion, gave it 800 by 600. That's not going to fly anymore for a lot of people. I mean, people were complaining when it first came out, and it was 640 by 480.
Mm-hmm.
And it was still popular, even though people grumbled about it. Also, Diablo 2 had the first mega-selling collector's edition. That was impossible to find. And you know what? I saw it just sitting there because someone never picked up their copy from Electronics Boutique. And I bought it, and I sold it on eBay. And in hindsight, I wish I hadn't. Even though it wasn't really that great. It was a great collector's edition, but I don't know. Even now, I think there may be some bragging rights to owning the Diablo 2 collector's edition. Boy, 2000 is so long ago.
Yeah. Man. It's just really cool to see this. Like, I'm so excited to give... Like, in all honesty, we know for, like, Diablo 4 isn't coming out for a while. It's probably not coming out until, I would argue, maybe 2024, 2025.
Yeah, Diablo 4. Diablo 2 is probably coming out, it's coming out this year.
Yes.
And that's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I can't wait to do a deep dive, you know, and you can play co-op or you can play competitive. I always played co-op. I didn't, you know, I wasn't really into doing the PvP in Diablo 2. I know some people who were. If you did, you had to stay far away from each other. And that's one of the cool things about the game. You could split up if you wanted to. Or you could fight together. I will say that. Me and my friend had almost fist fights over who got whatever magic item. Because he always accused me of getting all the magic items for myself. And hoarding them to myself. And I was.
You almost got in a fist fight, and there's a story about some a Democrat in Chicago trying to put a bill to ban Grand Theft Auto. And you're
whatever. Yeah, but I don't. Did they say it would have crossplay?
They did not. I don't think. Let me check.
I mean, I'm willing to bet you dollars to donuts they will.
Feels like something that they really ought to have.
Yeah.
I do know this. a couple of the things that they announced right off the bat, and this made a lot of people happy because I don't.
Like, okay. They said, here's the thing. Not at launch, but it could still come after launch, says the developer.
Yeah. But one of the most important things that they announced about this game is that, Warcraft 3 Reforged was a disaster.
Yes, let's talk about the developer, Vicarious Visions. Know what they made, what remasters they made. I know one of them was your favorite. Was it your favorite game of the year last year? Tony Hawk 1 and 2.
It wasn't my favorite, but it was very far up there.
Yeah, they also did the Crash Bandicoot Insane trilogy as well.
But one of the most important things is that Warcraft 3 Reforged was so panned because not only was it not a very good port, but it also replaced the original Warcraft 3 files.
Mm-hmm.
They are not going to do that with Diablo 2. The original files will stay intact, so if people want to play with their original Diablo 2, they can.
Diablo 2 is free, and they made it. They were one of the first people to not only make it free, but also CD-free. First, they made it CD-free, so you didn't need to have a CD to play it. Which was like, my God, they're doing that sort of trust. And then they said, screw it, you know what, it's free, anybody can play it, just play it. Because they really wanted people to be on Battle.net, I guess.
And then, yeah, like you said, Vicarious Visions is handling primary development on this, which is, like, They announced pretty recently that they would be shifting all of Vicarious Visions' efforts away from, like, their own games and into Blizzard games. And so this is going to be the first project and result of that, which is great. Vicarious Visions does great work, and they'll make this great as well. Like, I really appreciate knowing that Vicarious Visions is on this, because they do quality ports.
Here's the other thing, is that Diablo 3 never felt quite right to me. I don't care about the microtransaction controversy, whatever, you know. It just never felt like Diablo, you know. And I think people are going to be playing Diablo 2 for the first time. After playing Diablo 3, will suddenly get it. You know, like, oh, this is why.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking at some of the gameplay. Now, the Rogue class did have some gameplay showed off for Diablo 4, which surprised me, right? It looks very much like a Diablo game, like a Diablo 2 game.
Mm-hmm.
I will say this, you know, I hope they do Diablo 1 remastered. Even though it's just one dungeon, you just keep going deeper, deeper, and deeper in it. I think it would be nice for people to meet all the characters from that town before, you know, meet Wirt before all you know about Wirt is his peg leg, or the Butcher before he becomes the first boss that you fight.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's just, I hope they do Diablo 1 remastered. And I'm not the only person. I remember when Diablo 1 was first released, people loved it because it had some sick music. It had that solo guitar. Have you ever heard the Diablo 1 soundtrack?
Yes.
It's just so subtle and badass without, you know, it's just very chill but badass, you know.
I did like the soundtrack to Diablo 2. It was,
Yeah, I did too, but Diablo 1 just had that very tense but chill guitar. Acoustic guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And they also said they're remastering the cutscenes, because I remember all those cutscenes from Diablo 2 and Marius. It's going to be interesting to see how, you know, because here's the thing about it, watching those cutscenes now, everybody has such long faces. They look like they all just escaped from Brink.
Yeah.
That definitely had a very dark tone.
Yeah. But here's the thing, it wasn't... Diablo and Diablo 2 weren't very edgelord dark. I mean, the only thing I found a little bit edgelordy was Tyrael, you know, the angel. They had to make the angels look like they were evil too, or at least didn't really care about humanity. They just cared about defeating darkness. That was the only edgelordy thing about it. It just felt like good dark fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
And not edgelord dark fantasy, just dark fantasy. I will say this, I don't know who my favorite, it was either the Sorceress or the Necromancer. I will say why I like the Necromancer, just summoning 500 skeletons to fight for you while you hang back and let them do all the work.
I mean, the very first Diablo 1, I actually haven't had a chance to get a good look at it. I've listened to the music and stuff, and I know the story, but like... It is like, it's one-to-one, almost like an exact copy of Fallout, but like with fantasy setting instead of sci-fi setting.
You know, Diablo was originally going to be a turn-based strategy game.
I think, I have heard that before.
Yeah, I think it was David Jones was his name. He talked about how it changed, and when they made it real-time, it's like everything clicked.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had your first hack-and-slash roguelike.
Yeah. Oh, man. Like, this is...
I'm far more excited for Diablo 2 than I am for Diablo 4. I think a lot of people are the same way.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair. Diablo 4 is probably still quite a few years off.
I think also because we were all sort of... Even people who liked Diablo 3 sort of felt a little burned by it.
Yeah. Between, like, the gameplay and then the auction house debacle...
And even after that, I mean, they said, oh, well, the expansion fixed everything. And it's just like, Once you lose the hook, and I never got the hook, then, because the loot grind wasn't there like it was for Diablo 2. And I think, yeah, part of that was the auction house, but still. So anyways, again, you were sort of like meh about Overwatch 2. I think a lot of people said this seems more like a really expensive DLC than an actual sequel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I am excited a little bit for Diablo 4. It's just that I can't see it coming anytime soon. Diablo 2 is much more tangible, and it will give me a chance to explore something that I very much missed out on.
Here's the thing, everybody. I brought up Overwatch 2, and he immediately changed the subject to Diablo. That sort of tells you what he thinks of Overwatch 2.
It was disappointing, to say the least. Like, they...
Well, let me see a question. How far could you really go with Overwatch anyway?
Make a single-player campaign and make it good.
Okay.
That's all I want.
Isn't that what the hero missions are supposed to be?
Yeah. But, like, also, they didn't have... For a game that, like, was announced in late 2019 and then fell off the map for all of 2020 and then has reappeared in 2021, they didn't have very much to show for that game at all.
I think the pandemic changed a lot of things for it. Like, there would have been more content for the first Overwatch, you know, more attention, and they just couldn't do it. And now instead they're just going to do Overwatch 2. I don't know. I mean, the hero shooter has never been one for me. I think people believe that Battleborn was a better game, just not as popular as Overwatch.
Now, isn't Overwatch that arena battle game?
Yeah, it's a hero shooter.
Yeah, because I'm not interested in arena battle games.
I will say, you know, I did play Monday Night Combat way back in the day, which was a MOBA before anybody knew what a MOBA was.
Yeah.
I also played, by the way, Demigod, which was out and out a MOBA, but no one knew what a MOBA was at the time. What are these? I have to follow these creatures, or they call them creeps? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, Overwatch 2 was kind of a bust. There was a lot of other things that were way better than it. And
yeah, I mean, Diablo 2 is everything. Everybody's talking about Diablo 2, straight up.
Yep.
I don't think anybody really cares about Burning Crusade. And here's the thing, you know, as much as I prefer the original World of Warcraft, I just don't have the urge to play World of Warcraft Classic.
Yeah, I don't either. I gave it a shot just to...
No, I didn't even give it a shot. It's like, you know what? It's part of the past. Just leave the past alone.
Yeah. There are other games to play.
Diablo 2 I'd play now. The original Diablo 2. I mean, after this podcast, I could easily just sit down, play a little bit of single-player Diablo 2, even if it's 2000 form, you know, which is why I'm excited about Resurrected, because, you know, it's a game I would play now.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't care about World of Warcraft anymore.
Yeah, well, it's just not your thing.
No, I mean, I do like MMOs. I just, you know, I haven't played any MMOs in a long while, but, I mean, I could easily go back into Star Wars The Old Republic. I mean, it's still going on as a free-to-play. Not as big a population, of course, but...
But there are a lot of people out there that are enjoying World of Warcraft Classic, and they're enjoying the new stuff as well.
And good luck to them. And, you know, they get to play with the Blood Elves again.
Yep.
And the Blood Elves are where the meme, "If you're so evil, kill this kitten for fun," came from. Because that was the entire attitude of the Blood Elves. Kill this kitten for fun. Because people had that little quest in which you had to kill these tigers, these little baby tigers, as one of your first quests as a Blood Elf.
Wow.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
Also, their lines when you had them for an action, one of them would be, "Don't you wish your girlfriend was hot like me?" And it was the male Blood Elf who said it. Anyways, speaking of events, we'll talk. By the way, before we talk about the Xbox event coming up, let's talk about. There's also going to be a State of the Play for PlayStation, and there's a lot of speculation of what Sony's going to announce. They already have this. I think they already announced VR for the PS5, which is fine. It only makes me wish that Microsoft, you know, just allow people to use the Oculus Quest 2 with the Xbox Series X, just like you can do it with the PC. Mm-hmm. Just have the all you need is the is either the PC link or just the software to communicate with the Xbox. You don't even have any system requirements with the Xbox with the Oculus Quest, because the Oculus Quest does it for you. But what are you hoping for announcements of for State of the Play? What do they call it again?
PlayStation State of Play. State of Play. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway, what are you hoping for?
I don't know what I expect out of it. I assume that we're going to see more Ratchet and Clank because that game is right around the corner with its launch.
Mm.
I also would assume that there's a couple games they showed off last year that we, Returnal and, what was the name of the other one? My colleagues and I have been calling it Chorbs, but it's like, let me see.
Also,
it's called Chorus, but for some reason they decided to do something weird with the U and make it look like a V, so it just looks like it's called Chorbs, and it's like a space action game.
Oh, okay. The other thing is that Sony announced yet another game is coming to PC, Days Gone, which is a big so what. No one liked Days Gone; it was dull. But it continues the fact that Sony's going to keep on releasing first-party games on PC because they realize, you know what? There's money to be made there. Mm-hmm. And I hear they're not making... Here's the problem with Sony right now. The games they're making are quadruple A, and they cost a lot. Mm. And as large as the PlayStation fan base is, it isn't enough really to cover the expenses as much as they'd like it to. Because they make really expensive games. And I'm wondering, what happened to the indie games like Fat Princess, you know, which wasn't really a great game? But, you know, Sony was willing to make smaller games. Now everything has to be the biggest and the most high budget. Yes, The Last of Us 2. You know? All these big, big, big budget games.
Mm-hmm.
I find it hard to believe that Ratchet and Clank would be a big budget game. I mean, it may be a AAA game, but I don't think it's going to be a game that breaks the bank.
I feel like they had some games that weren't AAA. I just don't remember the names of them.
You see, that's the problem. You don't remember the names of them.
I mean, I know there was a cat detective game. There was another game where there was a kid lost in a forest fighting little spirit things. I just don't remember. Like I said, I just don't remember the names.
Yeah,
But I'm just saying that a lot of they're making these really big budget games and they're not really.
They do have a new Sackboy game. I don't know if it came out yet or not.
It Little Big Planet
be like an adventure game.
Oh,
it did. It's a platformer.
Yeah,
right. It's just called Sackboy Adventure Earth thing or something. Sackboy: A Big Adventure.
I mean, Microsoft is willing to let Cuphead go to the PlayStation. So, and now you have multi-platform, and I think, you know, Sony, I think, is glad that they're being forced to make MLB multi-platform, simply because it's a niche game. I mean, it's one of the games that they can show, say, this is an exclusive, and no one else does baseball like we do. But on the other hand, sports games don't make as much as you think they do. They need multi-platform to survive. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why you see Madden on everything and NHL on everything, because they need as many players as possible. So, I think, you know, I don't know why, but I get the impression that they're going to try something like PlayStation All-Star Battles again, you know, Battle All-Stars again, something along those lines. Except not depending on properties. Because I think what Sony really wants is a great party fighting game. That's sort of like Super Smash Brothers. I don't know. It just seems, for whatever reason, I get that impression.
Hmm. I don't know. As far as, like, what we see on Thursday, I do think that, like... I don't know if it's going to... Supposedly there's like 10 announcements that are coming in it.
is what I've heard.
Yeah. Here's the problem with Sony, though. A lot of the announcements they make are for games that are not going to appear for years on end. The last, you know, The Last Guardian, you know, Killzone back in the day. All these games that just take years and years and years to come out. They make big promises, and then they have to wait for them to be finished.
Yeah. They are doing a pretty quick turnaround on Ratchet and Clank, which that game looks pretty delightfully good.
I wonder if they're using the engine that was on the other Ratchet and Clank reboot.
I don't know. Maybe.
Here's the question. Is this Ratchet and Clank going to be another reboot, or is it going to be a sequel to the first reboot?
It's going to be a sequel of sorts, because like they're straight up already in some sort of like trouble when they get into the game as it is, and it seemed, for what they had in the trailer, it seemed like they expect that you already know something about Ratchet and Clank.
Yeah, the biggest problem with the reboot was that it was a movie tie-in, and they had to crunch in a lot of story, and it made the game nonsensical. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, you know, now that they don't have to pay to the whims of a motion picture release for this Ratchet and Clank, so they can slow it down and take their time and make a story that is a lot more coherent.
Mhm. Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. It's a couple days. Actually, it's I guess tomorrow, right?
Yeah, today is Wednesday.
Yep.
So we'll know by next podcast what's going on. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next news item. Although that wasn't a news item. That was just me saying, oh, by the way, before we discuss this announcement, which hasn't been announced yet, Xbox will reportedly hold an event related to Bethesda next month. This comes from comicbook.com. Microsoft announced last year that ZeniMax Media and its subsidiary, Bethesda Softworks, would be acquired by the corporation and folded into its Xbox Game Studios lineup in 2021. Outside of the general announcement of the acquisition, though, the team at Xbox hasn't talked much about what this move will mean going forward for all parties. That said, it sounds like the silence is soon going to end. Mentioned by GamesBeat's Jeff Grubb in the latest GamesBeat Sides podcast, Xbox is said to be planning to hold an event of some sort related to Bethesda in the near future. Grubb says that this will be one of the marquee events that Xbox has as it leads up to E3 2021. The reason why Xbox hasn't held a presentation like this is because it'd be illegal to talk about it, because the deal to acquire Bethesda hasn't fully transpired yet. They're waiting on Europe to give the A-OK on the merger to make, you know, because this is a big merger and they have to reassure it's not a monopoly. Which I don't see even, you know, Bethesda may be large, ZeniMax may be large, actually, it's not just Bethesda. It's not like Microsoft bought Nintendo, you know. It's not like they're trying to corner the market on the entire games industry. It's just like, what, 8 game studios, basically? The reason why the one thing that I really want to know about is Starfield, which is heavily rumored to be coming out this year, and I have no idea what it is. I know it takes place in space. I know that there's a guy in an astronaut pressure suit with a Starfield logo on it, but we don't know what kind of game it is. Here's the thing I don't think it is. I don't think it's an outer space Fallout / Elder Scrolls type kind of game. I think it's going to be more action-y than that. And oh, by the way, this is the first game since Fallout 4 that Todd Howard's focused on.
Yes, that's right.
I feel like it is going to be action-y, and it's going to be probably... I mean, I would hope that they do something different, but I'm kind of just expecting a first-person space game with lasers and shooting at people.
Maybe it'll be like Mass Effect, and you know, and that there are RPG elements, but there's going to be third person over the shoulder combat. I do know this. It's going to take place in space, as in outside of a spaceship.
They have said it's going to be an RPG of sorts as well.
But it is going to take place in space, actual space, not, you know, like inside a spaceship, but outside the spaceship in zero G, because they have a lot of shots of characters being outside of a ship.
my guess is that it's going to be something similar-ish to Elite Dangerous.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's the big thing, isn't it? Elite Dangerous, Star Citizen, mm-hmm. you know, all these games that are space, but they also have... Oh, we're also including planet traversal and cars and going inside stuff, you know. It's not just stuck to being inside a spaceship, having pew-pew battles with other spaceships.
Yeah. I still think it's going to be basically Bethesda's take on sort of an Elite Dangerous type of game, where like you and I mean like specifically what Elite Dangerous is currently doing with Odyssey, where like you'll have space adventures, you'll be able to specialize in a sort of job class,
explore planets,
all that jazz.
You know, I hope it's a really advanced version of No Man's Sky.
That would be nice too.
Now, I know the one thing that Scott will probably be more interested in, because they teased it, and it makes no sense to tease it if they're not going to show off the first Elder Scrolls 6, at least screenshots, if not gameplay.
Yeah, I would love to look forward to seeing more information on that, if that's what Microsoft is planning to do with their next showing. Because it's like, we don't really have much more on that either, just like with Starfield. We just have this title saying Elder Scrolls 6 and what looks to be a arid mountain area that might be Hammerfell, maybe, but even that's just speculation until we have definitive answers.
2023, I mean. That's...
Yeah. Yeah, 2022 and 2023 are going to be big RPG years.
Yeah, I mean, you have Avowed coming out as well. Oh, God. You know, Microsoft could do a mic drop right there by saying, oh, by the way, Oblivion is making Fallout New Vegas 2. Drop the mic, end the show.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to.
They're not going to, but they could just... How many people would get extremely excited about that prospect?
Yeah, because it's like, you want the old team making it, I assume, and from what I can tell, that team is... kind of dispersed onto other projects, right?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. They're still working on Grounded, but it seems to me like the team for Grounded is getting smaller and smaller because it's coming closer to completion.
Right.
And they're going to have a few people on that constantly making content, because a concept like Grounded, okay, we're going to add some new insects. It'll be like Minecraft. Okay, this year we're going to add cats.
Yeah, I just know that Josh Sawyer was a major part of Fallout New Vegas, and I've seen from his tweets that, as far as he knows, there's no Fallout New Vegas to be made.
I wouldn't think about it either, but it would be. Could you imagine if the show ended like that?
Yeah, I'm sure people would go crazy.
I would also, you know, here's the thing. You have a lot of talented developers who are wrapping up on stuff, like Ghostwire Tokyo, and what was the name of that other game that's supposed to be a slow Sony limited time exclusive, that's sort of like a 70s romp? Deadpool? No, not Deadpool. what was it called again? Death Spiral? You know, the game in which you keep on resurrecting your assassins, and you have to keep on trying to make those assassinations.
I don't know.
Oh, Deathloop. Deathloop.
Hold on.
It's Deathloop. Yeah.
Deathloop, yeah.
So, I think Arkane is working on Deathloop, right? So here's the thing, though. You have some major developers who are wrapping up on some of these games, and Microsoft has gotten this idea in which they're going to go up to a developer and say, okay, what do you want to make? Oh, you want to make that? Cool. Just do it, and we'll promote the shit out of it. I wonder what Arkane is going to work on next. It won't be another Dishonored game. I'd be very surprised if it was. And they're very good at making, first-person shooters, or first-person stealthers. So it'll be interesting to see what Arkane works on for Microsoft.
Yeah, well. What do you hope to see out of this?
I don't know. I mean, here's the thing. Microsoft could always assign some of these developers to some of their properties. Like, it's not going to happen, but can you imagine if Microsoft told Arkane, hey, listen, we want you to make a Halo spinoff game. Mm-hmm. Real question is, what is Tango Gameworks going to make for Microsoft next?
Yeah, I don't know, because right now they're still working on Tokyo,
Ghostwire Tokyo, Ghostwire,
or whatever.
But that's going to be released, I think, this year.
Yes. I wonder if they'll return to the Evil Within again.
Ooh.
Like a next
Evil Within 3? Yeah. By the way, it's funny. Speaking of which, those rumors about Microsoft acquiring Techland keep on going, yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. Yes, it's going to happen. No, they flatly said it's not going to happen. And then, oh, guess what? They're hiding the fact, yes, they are, you know. And it makes you wonder what's going to happen with that. All we know is that their game. Oh, damn, what was the... Dying Light 2 will be a Game Pass game. That's the only thing that people are very sure about.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really looking forward to Dying Light 2, by the way. But, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what... We know what people are making now, but the real question is, what are you going to make next? Like, Double Fine? What is Double Fine going to make for Microsoft next? After Psychonauts 2? What is In Exile going to do after they just did Wasteland 3? It's just, you know, I'm looking forward to 2023, 2024. Because that's when the new games that these companies are making specifically for Microsoft are going to be released.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. Like, it's going to be an interesting couple of years after we finally get through this first slate of what everybody's been kind of working on since 2020 and 2019 and see, like, what the new projects are going to look like.
Also, in 2023 and 2024, the new car car smell of the Xbox Series X and PlayStation 5 will be gone, and people will get to the nitty-gritty of making really good games that take advantage of both systems. By then. I mean, I will say, you know, Demon's Souls is good, but there's going to be games better than that.
Yeah, I agree with that. Especially once Unreal Engine 5 finally launches.
Yeah.
Which is supposed to also happen this year.
Yep. It's going to be interesting. I'm more interested in what they do with AI than what they do with graphics, though. I want to see upgraded AI. Anyways, let's move on. Go ahead, TJ.
Okay. Skullgirl's second Encore's new fighter, Annie, is out in March, and three more characters are on the way, from Eurogamer. Skullgirl's second Encore is introducing a new fighter, Annie of the Stars, to its roster this March. Developer Hidden Variable has confirmed, and three additional DLC characters will follow. The developer says that due to technical complications, Annie won't be immediately available on Switch. However, it will share more details once it has a timetable on availability. As confirmed in a new developer post on Steam, Annie's arrival won't mark the end of Skullgirl's second Encore's DLC plans. Hidden Variable has also revealed that three additional characters, all still shrouded in secrecy, are in the works, and these will all be made available as part of the game's newly announced Season 1 Pass. Priced at $34.99, this will, at a minimum, grant access to all four new characters, each with their own stage, music, palettes, and full story mode, as well as an exclusive palette pack, a digital soundtrack for the new characters, plus an updated version of the Skullgirl's digital art compendium. Depending on how well the Annie DLC and Season Pass does, we hope, says Hidden Variable, we hope to add even more free stuff to the Season Pass list, up to and including a fifth brand new character.
So you're the one who covers Skullgirls. Do you have any inside info?
After the debacle that happened last year with its...
Well, yeah, notice it's not Lab Zero, it's Hidden Variable.
With Lab Zero's creative director being basically being outed by everyone around him as a manipulative piece of shit.
Don't hold back, TJ. Tell us what you really think.
Well, not just my words, pretty much.
I know, I'm just saying.
Like, that guy crashed and burned everything that, all the goodwill and all the good things that he put together. Just like,
well, like I said, it's no longer Lab Zero, it's Hidden Variable.
But I am happy to see that Skullgirls is continuing to live. Like, I'm happy to see new content coming to it. I'm happy to see, like, they've moved forward past all the issues. They have ideas for new, not only new content, but also, like, want to gauge the support of fans and see how far they can take things. It's really, I would say, it's really promising and optimistic to see what they've got on their roadmap. And I'm really happy to see. I really hope that they knock it out of the park.
You still play it?
I haven't picked it up in a while. I've been focused on Guilty Gear Strive, and I only have time for so much game.
Yes, we know. Guilty Gears is your religion.
Yes. But I do know that there's a very fervent community around Skullgirls, and I really hope that they stick with it and make this worthwhile, because it would be cool to see more content for this game.
Yeah. Okay, Scott, take the next item. Scott? Uh-oh. I hope he's not asleep now. Scott? You there?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay, next item, please.
All right. Okay. Let's see. Stardew Valley, the board game sells out in one day. This is from PC Gamer. In March 2020, we learned that... We learned about a pair of students in the Netherlands who made their own board game based on Stardew Valley. Now fans of the Tranquil Farming Sim could get their hands on a fully official version, but just one day after it was revealed, the first printing of Stardew Valley, the board game, is already sold out. Stardew Valley creator Eric Barone said that makers are now working on a second run. The game is designed for 1 to 4 players, requires about 45 minutes per player to get through a full year, although that can be adjusted if you like to roll through a little more quickly. The goal for players is to work together to protect the valley, ultimately chase the Joja Corporation from town by completing Grandpa's goals and restoring the local community center. Specific goals are randomized from game to game, and rules can be tweaked to make it tougher or easier to get things done. Time, weather, and events are managed to a deck of cards, and players will advance their starting tool, gain new skills and items, and gather resources as the game progresses. Appropriately making friends will also unlock unique gifts and reveal community center bundles, which you'll need if you want to throw off the corporate yoke. The store page pointedly reiterates that caution about the game's complexity, going as far as to wave off potential customers, although, to be honest, I doubt that's going to sway many serious Stardew fans. Stardew Valley, the board game, sells for $55, but unfortunately now only ships within the U.S.
I saw the game pieces. It looks really nice. I actually had the opportunity to buy it, but I have so many board games coming down the pike right now, I really can't fit another one right in here. Although, you know, the fact that it has a solo player mode.
That's interesting. Although I'd probably just play the game if I was going to do solo mode.
It looks really nice, though.
That is good, at least.
Have you seen it, TJ?
The board game?
Yeah.
No, I've never been a big Stardew Valley person, so this kind of just, like, I really didn't care that much. But, like, I know people that have been, like...
But here's the game. Here's the thing. I'm not really into Stardew Valley either, but I am into board games, and it looks really solid. It reminds me a little bit of Agricola.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit, because they're both about farming. The pieces are really high quality. It just looks really nice.
Yeah, I have friends that are huge into Stardew Valley, and they've been super into the idea of this game. Like, to them, it's like... It's getting more of what they love to do already. and in a new way. So, like, I know a lot of Stardew Valley fans have been stoked about seeing this board game to come to fruition.
Yeah, and already there's a second printing of it. So apparently everybody's into it, or at least there's a huge fan base for it. You know what really shocks me, though? This did not go the Kickstarter route. They just released it. Here's the game. It's released. And, of course, it'd be sold out, which is something that doesn't happen with Kickstarter.
Right.
Maybe they just didn't want to have to deal with stretch goals.
Mm-hmm. Possible. I guess they didn't need to go the Kickstarter route if they had enough to make the prototype and produce more and then just sell those and then you can use that money to make...
I sent the link. Check out the game pieces and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does look nice. I guess they don't really... Yeah, I mean, he's made enough money off of the video game to get this produced. This actually kind of reminds me of Settlers of Catan a little bit.
A little bit. The thing is, you have to raise crops. In Settlers of Catan, you're just claiming land that'll produce it on a die roll. The official site does have a rule book, so people who are interested in just reading the rules.
Mm-hmm. What other game has grandpa gold cards?
Hmm?
I don't think there is one.
I said that. What other game has grandpa gold cards?
Well, I mean, they're win condition gold cards, yeah.
I know.
But
that's
yeah.
But that's still adorable.
Yep. I actually have Cities. Oh damn it! I forgot the name of it. Based on the game. Damn it! And I can't believe I forgot the name of the damn game. City Skylines. I have the board game version. I was actually sent the board game version of that a while ago, before it was even released. And it's a nice co-op game, but it's hard as hell. And there are a few games that are based on video games. This one seems more like it was meant to be a board game than those games. Like, it wasn't really a stretch to turn this game into a board game.
Yeah, it looks really good.
Yep. Like I said, it looks really lush, and it uses the graphics of the game, you know, but makes it more cartoony and more friendly, and it just... There are a lot of games that you look at the pieces, you say, I want to play this.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm not sure... Any serious board gamer will probably be interested in this game. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Watchdog Legion's online mode is coming in March, and this comes from PC Gamer. If you imagine you run around London with a bunch of friends, hijacking drones, controlling cars remotely, and sticking it to the man, your wait is almost over. Watchdog Legion's online mode is coming in just a few short weeks. The original date was delayed from early December 2020 into early 2021, so Ubisoft could focus on patching the single-player game. Now that a new release date has been announced, Watch Dogs Legion's online will launch on March 9th. It'll include open-world co-op, 8-player Spider-Bot arena battles, and 4-player tactical operations. 8-player Spider-Bot arena battles. If you've played Watch Dogs Legion, you're really familiar with the Spider-Bots. Be interesting. I mean, they can shoot, but they have to plop themselves down and stay still to shoot. That's like a little turret.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it like a really nasty game of tag? Because one of the things that Spider-Bots do is they hide and they go through ducts, and it's sort of like, you know, having to go through ducts and tag it, what's called, you know, surprise people with stealth. And 4-player tactical operations, that I'm interested in.
Yeah. It's, we had somebody do a preview of this game, and by all accounts, like, it's seeming pretty fun. I have never thought about, like, what you would do if you were going to do multiplayer and Watch Dogs.
Well, open world co-op is an obvious thing. You and a friend are doing missions together.
Yeah, and... Like, given the fact that Watch Dogs Legion's whole gist is that you play characters with specialties to them. That sounds like it would be really fun.
Yeah, here's my thing. If you're going to play co-op in that game, just jack the difficulty on everything way up. Because the game, as a single player, when I was playing, was too easy. There are too many game-breaking abilities that just made missions a snap of the fingers. So if you're going to do co-op, I hope there's a way to make it like a nightmare level.
Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see how they balance it, given like what you thought of like the difficulty of the game. Because like clearly you want it to have some sort of challenge to it. Of course, there's people that want to play for like story mode sensibility, but like you don't want to make it so walk in the park that there's just like everything feels trivial.
Yeah. Anyways, you know, it's coming out in 2 weeks, and we'll see what it's like. TJ, take the next one.
Alrighty. Minecraft Dungeons: Flames of the Nether arrives alongside a free in-game update from PC Gamer. Minecraft Dungeons just got even more Minecraft Dungeons in the form of Flames of the Nether. It's a paid DLC pack, and as the name implies, it's set in the Nether.
Wait, time out. Scott, what's the Nether?
It's basically hell.
What, do you just dig, keep on digging down until you hit it?
No, you go through a portal, you make an obsidian portal, and you go through the portal, and it opens up into hell. It says hell in the biome.
Okay.
Or used to, anyways. You're digging through Netherrack. On the Java edition, they added biomes. I guess those biomes will probably be in this one. I can't imagine it not being in there.
Yeah.
And you fight all assortment of creatures. You got magma cubes. You got wither skeletons. You got blazes. You got, the pigmen or piglins now.
Okay, well, before we go on, continue, TJ, because they do mention the piglins.
Mm-hmm. Down below, you'll gain access to 6 missions, which, if all goes smoothly, should net you a bunch of new weapons, gear, and artifacts. But you'll need to murder a bunch of new nether-themed enemies to get that loot. That'll set you back about $6. But there's also a substantial free update rolling out alongside it. These free additions are mostly tuned to keep you in the game, the biggest being Ancient Hunts. These are procedurally generated missions you'll gain access to in the endgame, which weave in and out of the Nether and other familiar parts of the overworld in action-packed, stitched-together adventures. Naturally, these runs have a higher chance to reward with rarer items, but they're the only way to get gear in a new rarity tier called Gilded. Gilded items will only drop from ancient mobs, which are basically super-powered versions of enemies that you've encountered before. Ancient Hunts will also be the best place to get gold, a new currency accepted by a piglin merchant specializing in gilded wares.
So, Scott, are there ancient mobs already in Minecraft?
No, not in the Java edition. But there's ancient debris, which you can make into netherite armor. But no ancient mobs, because it's not the Java and even the Windows version isn't a Diablo clone. So,
have you played Minecraft Dungeons at all?
No, I haven't played it yet.
Okay,
but I've seen it, what it's like, and it is a lot like a Diablo clone.
I guess. Yeah, I mean it's fun. It's fun, but you know what? Here's the thing: it's the sort of game in which you can play with a younger person. You know, someone who's not as experienced.
I've often heard it referred to as baby's first Diablo.
Yeah, that's what I called it. But I think this update is probably an answer to that, saying, okay, so you want something hard? Okay, we're going to give you some hard stuff. I mean, here's the thing, you know, as I said with Diablo 2, the loot grind is really important, and if you don't have the loot grind, then you don't have a really good, roguelike.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's also $6, most people will be able to afford that because a lot of people are playing it on Game Pass. And the thing is that a lot of people probably wouldn't play Minecraft Dungeons without Game Pass. You know, it's that sort of game in which you say, you know, I wouldn't buy it, but since it's free on Game Pass, I might as well give it a check. You know, check it out.
Yeah, I can see that.
And it is fun. The loot grind is simplistic, but I think a lot of it is just, you know, it's like a theme park Diablo's clone. You know, it's where you're going around checking stuff out. Although, to tell you the truth, I haven't played on the unlocked harder levels yet. So, perhaps it gets really hard as it goes along. I just haven't had time to play it. But it is on the, it is on my, on, xCloud. So I could just play it on my cell phone if I really wanted to.
So I can imagine if, at this rate, that there'll probably be an end, DLC in the future where you get to fight the dragon. at some point.
Yeah. I will say though, it's nice to see that they're keeping this game, you know, with content, with new content. They're not letting it die.
Yeah.
Because there are some games which, you know, haven't gotten new content, and people are just waiting for new ones. Cough. That fighting game that Microsoft released. Oh, Killer Instinct. There are people who really want to play new Killer Instinct content, but it's been in standby mode. Which I know TJ, as the fighting expert, probably knows that there's a lot of people who are really devoted to Killer Instinct and are really begging Microsoft to find a developer to make another one. To make another, you know,
I feel like
season.
That's a name I haven't heard in many years, Killer Instinct.
Mm-hmm.
The last new content was like 2 or 3 years ago, I think.
Okay,
let's put it this way. There's no new Killer Instinct content scheduled for the Xbox Series game platform. And from what I hear, Microsoft wants to do another Killer Instinct game. They just can't find a developer because Iron Galaxy is doing something else, and the original developer is gone.
What is Iron Galaxy up to nowadays? They worked on the last thing they worked on was Overwatch in 2019 for Nintendo Switch.
They worked on Extinction. The problem is that they developed a Spyro Reignited trilogy.
Yes.
But here's the thing. They're owned by someone else, so they're not available to Microsoft.
That's a bummer.
Yeah.
And Double Helix, what are they up to?
They're gone. I think they were disbanded.
They were acquired by Amazon.
And they were disbanded by Amazon.
They are trapped in Amazon Game Studio hell.
Yeah, it's
banished to the Amazon Game Studios zone, where nothing good ever happens again.
They died. So
everybody just works on New World, and nobody knows when it's coming.
I mean, here's the thing: they joined Amazon in 2014, and they didn't do anything for them.
Yep, pretty much.
Was UFO Love Cows an Amazon game, or no? That was an Android game.
Yeah, no, that was an Android game.
They did work on Strider too, but that was the last game they made for Microsoft.
Yeah, so they've just been integrated into Amazon Game Studios, and they're doing
nothing. They're doing nothing. Unfortunately,
that's a bummer though. And you need a good developer on. You need a good developer on Killer Instinct because we've seen what happens when you put a character in the game that isn't well balanced. And we saw what that happened. That case was.
Killer Instinct is an amazing examination of how a game can go right. Because you know what Double Helix did when first they submitted their version of the game, right? To show Microsoft what Microsoft said yes. So what did Double Helix do? They got the two people who were the brainchilds behind Killer Instinct and brought them in and had them help them make Killer Instinct. And then when they were unable to do Season 2 and it was handed off to Iron Galaxy, they stayed for like 2 weeks with Iron Galaxy helping transition the new developer smoothly to make Season 2. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the fact that Killer Instinct didn't die on the vine is a minor miracle unto itself.
Yeah. What I was saying was that they need a developer that understands how to balance characters well. Because we've seen what happens when they don't balance them well with General Rom. When they added General Rom in, that, broke the game. And it's not that General Rom wasn't a cool character. It's that he had attacks that, literally just
broke the game.
Like it made the game crash?
Yes.
Oh, that is bad.
No, it's more like overpowered.
No, in this case, he actually crashed the game.
Oh, okay.
Like, he has this bat attack.
Yeah, but
if you use it enough, it will, like, run out the memory on the game and freeze it up.
I'm losing. I'm going to take you with me.
Apparently.
So, you got to have somebody that knows how to balance it in a way that makes sense and makes sure that things like that don't make it to a final product. And that's hard work to do, but that's why you need someone who knows how to develop fighting games on it.
Yeah, I think at this point it would be a Killer Instinct 2. It wouldn't be a third season if they make a new right. Killer Instinct. But hopefully and probably they would fold in all the characters from Killer Instinct Season 1 and 2 into the game, if you already own them.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, we do have listener feedback. Go ahead, TJ.
From Ralph, about episode 597. Hi guys, sorry for not writing anything for a long time. Shitty time for everyone, and I was even was so lazy I did not even listen to any podcast during the time. At Game Passes, I don't like any of them, but that's my personal thing. For me, I don't play enough of the games so that it would be worth it for me. I had PS Plus for a long time for online gaming. Besides that, I did not play any of the games I got for free.
By the way, speaking of people who play World of Warcraft, Ralph is still knee-deep in raids and stuff like that in World of Warcraft. I mean, yeah. not classic. I mean, actual World of Warcraft, the newer version of it.
Mm-hmm. At Demon Souls, oh my god, I think that was one of the hardest things I've ever tried to handle. I never reached level 2, I never got past the first castle.
Oh god.
I tried it several times until I was so frustrated that I put the game away for months.
Let me ask you a question. How many people do you think had that experience with Demon Souls?
I would say yeah. Because, like, there are probably a lot of people that got PS5s and Demon Souls was, like, the game.
No, I mean the original Demon Souls for PS3.
Oh, well, probably also the case because that was also like a big, No, actually, Demon's Souls wasn't like huge on PS3. It was when they got to Dark Souls that it really popped.
Yeah, but, you know, it did have word of mouth.
In any case, like, there are no doubt a lot of people that jumped into that for the first time and got slaughtered by it and just, like, never went back. But yeah, it's something you gotta want, I would say. Like, I don't look down or shame anyone who walked away from a Demon's Souls or Dark Souls or Bloodborne game. Yeah. Because, yeah, like, some people just don't have the patience for that. And, you know, do what makes you happy. Live your life.
Here's the thing, though. There's enough games that are starting to adopt the Dark Souls sort of thing, like that Star Wars game, you know, Jedi...
Order.
Yeah, it's like that. It actually, okay, I'll correct myself. It wasn't so much. It was more like Tenchu than it was Dark Souls, but you get the point.
Mm-hmm.
I think Don't Starve was a lot like that, where it just wanted to kill you so badly, where even like the mere night itself will kill you if you don't have a campfire and light there. It's just on a knife's edge all the time.
I don't know. It wasn't that it was hard. It was more like it was annoying that drove me off Dark Souls. Don't Starve.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like I said, I've beaten Ghosts and Goblins, and games like that prepared me for Demon Souls.
Yeah, I saw your tweets on Ghosts and Goblins, TJ, and if I was reading you right, it's more easier to continue your adventure. You don't have to start all the way over if you die.
Yeah, that's what I was saying before, is that when you beat a level, you're done with that level. It saves the progress, and you can either go back and replay levels that you've beaten before or move on to the next levels.
That's good.
It's very nice in that way, where it's like very compartmentalized, and you can pick it up and where you left off whenever you feel like it.
Anyways, moving on.
But yeah, at Cyberpunk, I pre-ordered it, and I did not really notice any of the problems. After the first patch, until I had some graphic problems, it ran fine for me. I only played it for 3 hours so far, but I enjoy it.
Here's the thing. I've actually played to finish it, and I don't regret doing that. I mean, here's the thing. I said this at the time, and I'll say it now. It is one of the most engaging cities or environments I've ever been in an RPG. It felt that Night City feels like a real city, and it feels really good. The problem is, you know, the skills, you know, are sort of obtuse and not very interesting, and they don't really tell you what they do. So I felt like I was playing combat a bit blind, even though I got through the game. I mean, I found some things that you know, I won't say they were exploits, but I would say that they were things that I relied on to get me through the game. And I would not have beaten Atom Smasher unless I had that nice sniper rifle and just took him down in a few shots like that. But I don't regret playing Cyberpunk, but it's not the sort of game that I want to play through again anytime soon. It's sort of like Fallout 4 for me.
Yeah. I mean, I've run into a bunch of bugs, and they're some of the funniest bugs I've ever seen in a game.
No bug could be better than the horsewoman, the donkey woman, the donkey grandma from Red Dead Redemption 1.
Did I tell you about the time that I called my car and it showed up as like a burnt out?
Yeah, I mean, that happened to me too.
My car got into some crazy shit while I was away, and I want to know what it was up to. I want to know this. I want the DLC that shows me what happened to my car before it made it to me. But that game has had. I've generally enjoyed my time with the game. It is jank beyond jank in some places, but I have generally enjoyed both seeing that jank and the myriad of ways in which it appears, and also just actually the actual quality of the game and the story that it's telling.
I'll say this, anyway, when Cyberpunk 2 is announced, I'll be on it.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's engaging enough that even despite jank, I don't mind dealing with it.
Did you get to the part where Johnny takes over your body?
Yes.
That is the most hilarious thing. Give me a drink. Give me another drink. Another drink. Another drink. There you get tossed out of the body. I fucking love this. And he just smacks the bouncer in the face. That was the best part of the game. Even though I didn't let Johnny take over my body as, you know, more. Just that one scene, and it was just hilarious. I felt violated and exhilarated at the same time.
Yeah. At PS5, at the moment I don't care about this console. There is no interesting title at the moment. So I don't care if there are any bots that buy them. Oh, and they are still buying them.
Yeah.
Bots are buying them.
Like I said, at some point there's going to be enough of them that you see them in the stores.
Yes. Yeah. Thanks as always for the episode, and I hope you will have or had a great Christmas time and nice relaxing holidays. Greetings from Germany, Ralph.
Yeah, oh, this was actually posted on Christmas time, Christmas Day, actually.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate it. Always, it's good to hear from him. And it's almost sort of like a time capsule when we get to, like, when I think about the things that we've talked about on this show and, like, go back into that mindset of, like, what was that conversation about at the time?
Episode 597? Well, you can always find out. Anyways, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with the industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast, which, by the way, is the only way you can do comments right now, because for whatever reason, the site is not allowing comments. It'll just not do anything. It's weird. Subscribe to us now on iTunes or leave us some iTunes comments. You can find me on Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Shard Remore.
And, we will see you next week. And we'll find out more about what's going on with Sony.
Yep, I can't wait to see.
Yep. And if they're going to announce Days Gone 2, I will slap them in the face.
Everybody's favorite motorcycle game.
I don't want to see Norman Reedus either.
Aw.
Sorry. Sorry. Go get away from me, Norman, and piss somewhere else. Go take a pee over there with your fetus. We will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.